Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Comcast Discrimination Case Press Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and 1 on your telephone keypad. Please note this call is being recorded, and I will be standing by if you should need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn today's conference over to Darielle Rodriguez, Project Director for Economic Justice at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome. The Supreme Court this term will consider Comcast versus National Association of African American-Owned Media and Entertainment Studios Networks, Inc. At issue in this case is whether, under one of our oldest federal civil rights statutes, Section 1981, a provision of the Civil Rights Act of 1866, race discrimination victims must meet the burdensome but-for causation standard at the pleading stage. On September 30, 2019, a coalition of civil rights organizations filed Friend of the Court briefs in support of respondents. Argument in the case has been set for November 13, 2019. Today, our panel of distinguished experts will discuss the possible implications of the case and its significance to the civil and human rights community. The call will proceed as follows. We will begin with Kristen Clark, President and Executive Director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. She will provide a brief welcome and an overview of the case. We will then turn it over to Ms. Sherilyn Eiffel, President and Director Counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund, who will provide remarks regarding the case. Followed by Vanita Gupta, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. Ms. Gupta will then be followed by Derek Johnson, President and CEO of the NAACP. And then we will turn it back to Kristen Clark to provide closing remarks, who will then turn it over to the moderator for a 20-minute Q&A. So at this point, I will turn it over to Kristen Clark for her remarks.
Good afternoon. My name is Kristen Clark, and I am President and Executive Director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. This is the most important civil rights case that will be heard by the Supreme Court this term. A negative ruling from the court stands to impose a burdensome pleading standard on litigants that would all but shut the courthouse door on a vast number of victims of discrimination all across the country. We know that race discrimination is an ongoing evil that has no role in our society. And as the United States has become increasingly diverse, communities of color need and rely on the protections of anti-discrimination laws, and Section 1981 has been core in providing critical protection against discrimination. A negative ruling in this case would cut the heart out of this bedrock statute. The historical significance of this statute cannot be understated. Congress intended to eliminate all race discrimination when it enacted Section 1981 of the Civil Rights Act of 1866. The statute was put in place to ensure full equality for newly freed African Americans. And since its enactment and after Jim Crow, courts have consistently interpreted Section 1981 to apply to contract discrimination experienced by African Americans in many forms, including in the context of public accommodations, employment, and education. Section 1981 also protects African Americans from discrimination in contracting, including in areas not covered by other civil rights statutes, such as independent contracting, and in the cases of consumer profiling in retail establishments. Simply put, the but-for standard being pursued by Comcast in this case would allow race discrimination to infect contractual discrimination in our country. Imposing a but-for standard would frustrate efforts by low-income African-American litigants and other litigants of color who lack access to resources to mount Section 1981 claims. I want to say a brief word on the statute and its construction. Section 1981 does not include the words because of or but for. Instead, Section 1981 has language that very broadly and plainly guarantees, quote, the same right, end quote, to contract as is enjoyed by white citizens. The only reasonable interpretation of guaranteeing individuals the same right requires that discrimination play no role in contracting decisions. Section 1981's language leaves no room for the application of a but-for analysis, as argued by petitioner Comcast. Let me just say a word about the modern-day significance of this statute. Because of its broad language, Section 1981, again, provides critical protections for groups not covered by other civil rights statutes. One of the most critical of such groups are independent contractors. This is particularly important because we live in a world in which the gig economy is rapidly evolving and growing. These low-wage gig workers or independent contractors are disproportionately black and brown and are not covered by Title VII. Consumers of color who experience discrimination in retail establishments are also not covered under Title II. They enjoy protection under Section 1981, and these examples help to underscore why Section 1981 is such a critical federal civil rights statute today. Let me say a brief word about the parties. There are well-resourced litigants on both sides of this fight. However, the implications for African Americans and other marginalized communities of color that lack access to the courts are grave. I also observe that Comcast is being represented by Miguel Estrada before the court in this case, a controversial activist whose nomination to the D.C. Circuit was staunchly opposed by the civil rights community in 2001. In closing, reversing the Ninth Circuit ruling would have a chilling effect on future efforts to mount civil rights claims in our country, allowing litigants to prevail if race played an impermissible role in contractual decisions is the fairest way to address race discrimination in contracting. A decision from the Supreme Court in favor of Comcast would unjustifiably harm the most marginalized groups in our society by excusing discrimination on the basis of race or ethnicity. This would threaten to roll back substantial strides that the courts have made in eliminating discrimination in contracting in our country. I now turn the floor over to Sherilyn Eiffel, President and Director Counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund.
Good afternoon. This is Sherilyn Eiffel. I'm the President and Director Counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, the nation's oldest civil rights legal organization, founded in 1940 by Thurgood Marshall. The Comcast case we're addressing today raises questions that go to the heart of our oldest civil rights statute, 42 U.S.C. Section 1981. The purpose of the statute, the Civil Rights Act of 1866, was clear. It was designed to place African Americans on equal footing with white Americans and to remove the vestiges of slavery by outlawing conduct not only by states, but also by private parties that would prevent African Americans from developing the means to work, to build wealth, to have access to the justice system, to vindicate their rights, and to live freely after enslavement. It applies broadly, prohibiting racial discrimination in employment, banking, consumer and business transactions, and other economic relationships involving the making or performance of contracts. It's a critical tool in protecting African Americans and other people seeking to own their own homes, rent apartments, obtain loans, shop, and in protecting African-American small business owners and would-be small business owners who face racial steering, discriminatory denials of equal terms and conditions for financial transactions. Now, this case involves the unusual circumstance of an African-American millionaire who charges racial discrimination in the denial by a media conglomerate to his bid to place channels on the media platform. As Kristen Clark already alluded to, both parties are well-resourced in this case. But the unusual party structure does not diminish the issue before the court in this case, which is about how Section 1981 should be interpreted in all cases. And an unfavorable ruling has the potential to undermine how these claims are adjudicated for thousands of low and moderate income African Americans and other people of color for decades to come. The issue concerns whether, in order to prove that the statute has been violated, a plaintiff must prove that the discriminatory decision reached by the defendant would not have been reached but for racism in the decision-making. The danger here is that even if racism infected a decision or a denial, the defendant would be protected from liability under Section 1981 unless racism was the but-for cause of the decision. Even worse, the interpretation at issue would compel African-American plaintiffs to know at the moment when they filed the case, at the pleading stage, that racism was the but-for cause of the decision they challenge. This can't be right. In essence, such a determination by the Supreme Court would mean that decisions that affect the economic rights of African-Americans could be tainted with a little bit of racism, or even a lot of racism. But so long as the plaintiff cannot allege that the decision would not have been made in the absence of racism, that decision would be insulated from Section 1981. The arguments advanced by Comcast could also shield the defendant from liability by simply pointing to a race-neutral reason that also supported the defendant's discriminatory decision. That's a dangerous argument. If a black and white employee make the same mistake on the job and an employer fires the black employee while urging the white employee to do better, the employer has obviously violated the law. It does not matter that there was a race-neutral reason that combined with the employer's racism to cause the black employer to be fired. Or consider a recent study involving law firm partners' review of associates' written work product. In a recent study, researchers presented partners with an identical written memo from a hypothetical black associate and a hypothetical white associate. The only difference was the listed race of the associate, yet the partners evaluated this identical memo much more negatively when it came from a hypothetical black associate. In reviewing the exact same memo on average, the partners marked twice as many spelling and grammatical errors for the hypothetical black associate as for the hypothetical white associate, and gave the black associate an average 3.2 out of 5 rating as compared to 4.1 out of 5 rating for the white associate. In the real world, such harsher evaluations of a black associate's mistakes could result in a black associate being denied a promotion offered to a white associate whose comparable mistakes were not judged as harshly. The firm could proffer a race-neutral reason for not promoting the black associate, the mistake in the associate's work product, but race would still be a but-for cause of the adverse action. Section 1981 unquestionably prohibits such discrimination because the black associate has been denied the same right to make and enforce contracts as is enjoyed by white citizens. Yet under Comcast's theory, the evidence of a race-neutral reason for the firm's conduct would lead to a dismissal of the case at the pleading stage of a 1981 violation. We should remember that there are numerous cases in which Section 1981 claims have been raised recently that are powerful and important and demonstrate the importance of this statute. In 2008, in a case called Brown versus Finley, Jacqueline Brown, a black woman, filed her suit under Section 1981 after she went shopping at a Florida jewelry store and was asked to provide identification, oral confirmation of her address, and her fingerprint in order to complete her purchase. The sales clerk told her that this was a company policy, but she refused to comply and informed the clerk that she was being discriminated against because she was black. She arranged for a white tester to go to the same store and purchase the exact same jewelry that she'd attempted to purchase. The white tester was not asked to produce ID, confirm her address, or provide fingerprints. And the district court therefore denied the defendant jewelry store's motion for summary judgment, finding that the plaintiff had stated a prima facie case of racial discrimination, and the case settled 2 years later. The NAACP Legal Defense Fund, the organization that I lead, used Section 1981 in our case Davis versus City of New York, a case that was part of the bundle of cases challenging stop and frisk in New York. This case was often known as the Being at Home While Black case, challenging the trespass arrest policies in public housing in New York City. The city's motion for summary judgment was denied, and we settled that case and our Section 1981 claims. The stakes are high in this case. An adverse ruling by the Supreme Court could make Section 1981, our oldest civil rights statute, virtually impotent in all but a narrow sliver of cases and place intolerable burdens on the plaintiff at the pleading stage to be able to demonstrate a violation of Section 1981. This is clearly contrary to the purpose of the statute, which even before the guarantees of the 14th and 15th Amendments were ratified, was designed to ensure the full citizenship of African Americans. Thank you.
I'm going to now turn the floor over to Vinita Gupta, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Vinita Gupta, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, a coalition of more than 220 organizations working toward an America as good as its ideals. One of those ideals is equality, and the core of what the Supreme Court is considering in Comcast versus National Association of African American-owned Media and Entertainment Studio Networks. That's why the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund and the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law have filed Friend of the Court or amicus briefs on behalf of 30 organizations, including the Leadership Conference. The Comcast case involves one of our oldest federal civil rights statutes dating back to Reconstruction that sought to place African Americans on equal footing with white Americans by requiring that all persons have the same right to make and enforce contracts. As we heard from my two colleagues, the question posed in the Comcast case is whether the African American-owned media company must show that race was a motivating factor in Comcast's decision to exclude its networks or whether race was the sole but-for factor. Let's be really clear, though, that how the justices decide this case has major consequences for the future of civil rights. If the court rules that the burden rests with the plaintiff to prove the decision would not have been made but for racism, it will be far more difficult for African Americans and other people of color to bring claims of racial discrimination. An unfavorable ruling would chip away at Section 1981, gutting the heart out of the statute of Section 1981 of the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which broadly prohibits racial discrimination in employment, consumer and business transactions, and other economic relationships that involve contracts. Without this protection, companies and others will have a much easier time getting away with discrimination against people of color, and the victims may have no other recourse. Congress enacted Section 1981 with the express purpose of ending racial discrimination in contracting, an intent that clearly and unequivocally supports the rejection of a but-for standard, which would only take the heart out of bringing and disable the ability to bring a civil rights claim from the workplace to housing to opening a small business or to taking out a loan. And Sherilyn provided some very important and powerful examples of this. Despite the fact that in this case the litigants are indeed well-resourced, a but-for standard would frustrate the efforts by low-income African-American litigants and other litigants of color who lack the resources to mount a 1981 claim. Comcast and the Trump administration in this case are on the same side, seeking to reverse legislation enacted to ensure economic and civil rights protections for African Americans and other communities of color. For nearly 3 years, the Trump administration has worked to dismantle our nation's most important tools for rooting out discrimination. The Leadership Conference is going to continue to work with our coalition members to maintain the full force of our federal civil rights laws. Everyone, no matter who they are or what their color, should have fair and equitable access to opportunity and economic mobility. I'd now like to pass this to Derek Johnson, President and CEO of the NAACP. Thank you.
Thank you, Vinita, and thank you, Christian and Sherilyn, for making the case so clearly. I am Derek Johnson, President and CEO of the NAACP, the nation's oldest and largest civil rights organization. We stand in complete solidarity with my colleagues who spoke before me. I will seek not to repeat much of what has been said, but to reaffirm our support of this effort to stop Comcast from undermining one of the most effective and oldest civil rights statutes in the country. The Supreme Court will hear this most important case, and it will be the most important case for us during their term. For Comcast to claim on one hand to embrace and support diversity and at the exact same time pro-offer an argument before this Supreme Court which would upend Section 1981 is something that no citizen in this nation who care about equity, justice, and a society free of discrimination should all be up in arms about and stand in solidarity to say this is not something we can tolerate. The NAACP, we have long used Section 1981 as one of the most effective tools in our toolbox to fight against discrimination. And as we convene this conference call, as African Americans in the media, you can surely appreciate any time you have a company, perhaps your company, who create an environment that's not stable for your existence, and that instability is based on race, you also will want to have a tool such as Section 1981 to ensure that your talents, your skill will be valued for that, and your race will not be used a tool to prevent your ability to really carry out your skills. For that reason and many others, we find it appalling for Comcast to take this approach. And finally, the underlying case is something that we're not taking a position on, because the irreparable harm of the argument Comcast is offering far supersede the underlying case. These corporations, Comcast is a corporation, the African-American business owner who's a multimillionaire. The outcome of this case would carry them to a new venture. But the harm that will be done if this argument go before this Supreme Court, a Supreme Court that we fear may not be friendly to issues around civil rights and equity, many of us will have to live with for generations in the future. So for that reason, and for many others, we stand in complete opposition to Comcast's argument. If they're serious about diversity, they would not pursue this course of action. And for that reason, all of our units across the country, 2,200 units in 47 states, we are saying to Comcast, this is not acceptable. This is not what diversity, a company that prides itself on diversity, would do. And you are completely undermining the value of a society free of discrimination by pro-offering an argument to dismantle one of the most significant civil rights acts in this country. Thank you.
Thank you to all of our panelists. That concludes our speaker's comments, and we will now turn it over to the moderator, who will handle the Q&A portion of the program.
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one keys on your telephone keypad. Keep in mind, you may remove yourself from the question queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Again, to ask a question today, please press the star and one keys on your touchtone telephone keypad. And we'll pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. Please note that if your phone is on speaker or muted, you may need to disable those settings to allow our system to receive your signal. Again, it is star and one to ask a question. And there are no questions on the line at this time.
Well, great. I guess if we don't have any questions, if any of the reporters on the line have any follow-up questions or need any information, they can give me a call or shoot me an email. My name is Stanley Augustine. I'm the digital media manager here at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. My email is saugustine, so saugustin at lawyerscommittee.org. Again, that's saugustine, saugustin at lawyerscommittee.org, or you could give me a call at 202-487-8296.